You're listening to the Save the Marriage Podcast. Your marriage can be saved and strengthened if you have the right information. Join Dr. Lee Baucom as he explores ways for you to improve your relationship and your life, starting right now.
Hey, this is Lee Baucom, and you're with us on a special podcast. This podcast is specifically about affairs, both emotional affairs and physical affairs. Now, do you realize the statistics about affairs? Because if you do, you know more than I do. Here's the reason. We don't have a good idea of how often affairs happen. There are different studies that show very different results. Somewhere between 30 to 60% of people, according to these studies, involve themselves in affairs. Now, those are pretty disproportionate numbers, 30 to 60%. That's a huge swing in numbers. The reason for that is because it's so hard, A, to define an affair, especially when you include emotional affairs, and B, it's so hard to get people to talk about that. And so there are some who would say, well, 30% is fair, but maybe conservative. Others would say that 60% is too high because of the way it's defined. Here's the difficulty. Statistics don't matter. What matters is what's going on with you. Statistics only apply to a large group of people. And my guess is you're here because somehow you're thinking that this does apply to you. If it not directly, at least you want to make sure that it doesn't lead to that. And so let's talk a little bit about what we mean by affairs. See, the problem with this is and how we define it. If you say to someone, have you cheated on a relationship? That brings in, what do you mean by cheating? Now, with physical affairs, there's even a wide range of behaviors where some people would say, yes, I had a physical affair, and others would say they did not. Some spouses would say, you know, if you kissed someone, if you held hands, if you did that kind of intimate physical behavior, then it's a physical affair. Others would say, no, it has to be sex. Then we get into a whole question of what kind of sex. And so that's part of why it's so difficult even to get our hands around, and I use that facetiously wording, about what we mean by a physical affair, much less an emotional affair. So let's talk about this whole bundle in a broader definition. I would just like to suggest that when we're talking about affairs, what we're really talking about is behavior that is inappropriate for the boundaries of a relationship, that somehow what should be maintained within a relationship has spread outside of that relationship. And here's the real tricky part. Many times when people are moving outside of what is expected in a relationship, begin to justify what they're doing. And so they talk about the emotional affairs, as many people would look on them, and say, oh, no, it's just a good friend. It's just someone I share information with. And that's part of why it's so difficult to get to the bottom of it. So let's just use as a broad definition an affair as being something that violates the expectations of a spouse in a relationship, that somehow it's violated. Now, that does raise the question of whether those expectations are understood or not. But let's just for my whole purpose of this, let's talk about that as a violation of the expectations within a relationship. And so physically, does it violate what you expect from a physical relationship between a married couple? You know, do they say that it violates that? And then in an emotional way, does it violate that? And let's talk a bit about that. See, I believe that we all have a somewhat finite amount of emotional energy that we're going to invest. And so if I'm investing that emotional energy over here, I'm not investing it over here. And so it's one place or the other. And that's what we're talking about with this emotional piece. You know, if there is emotional energy that should be shared within the marital relationship and it's being shared outside of the emotional relationship or outside of the marital relationship, that emotional energy is going to someone else, then I would use in a broad definition the fact that there is emotional infidelity going on. Whether the person who is committing it or not admits to that is a different matter. But I would say that at that point, you need to begin to say, hey, what's going on here? This is invading our relationship. So one of the key elements, one way you can look at an emotional affair and say, you know, is this really dangerous, is how secretive it becomes. And is the information that's being exchanged between the two people of an emotional nature? that ought to be shared between a married couple but is not. And I would even stop it before but is not, but is ought to be shared between a marital couple. So if somebody is confiding in somebody else outside of the marriage about their emotional life and they're not doing it with their spouse, they are definitely taking energy away from the relationship and putting it somewhere that makes it very dangerous because it's drawing outside of the bounds of that relationship. It always takes a certain level of kind of slips and mistakes along the way for somebody to fall into an affair. I rarely find people who purposely set out to have an affair, and those that do fall into a whole nother category. So let's just for a moment just kind of have a theory that there are basically two types of affairs. There are the affairs that are had by those who are addicted, that there is an addictive nature to it, addicted to either relationships or to sex. And so what they're going out for is their next fix. Generally speaking, we find that men have an addiction to the act of sex, the physical part, and women have more the addiction to the relationship, that what they're getting is out of the relating part. The sex may just be a part of it. And so you notice that for women, they can be involved in a physical relationship for the relational connection, and sex is a part of it, as opposed to men who are often there for the physical connection and the emotions just happen to be a part of it. That's generally speaking, not always the case, but that's when there is an addictive nature to it. And one of the ways that we know that is because there is a serial nature to this. People who are addicted to sex or relationships are always upping the ante, trying to find more, trying to get more out of that, because when we're talking about addictions, we're talking about that dopamine load in the brain, and at some point, the dopamine load overloads the system, and it takes more in order to get the same charge. So let's set that aside. Let's set those affairs aside, because when you find that somebody is dealing with that addiction, they have to deal with the addictive part of this, not deal with the relational part. They are going to have to deal with the relational part at some point, but you have to start with the addictive side, treating the addiction. And let's leave what is more classically true in affairs, that affairs happen for two reasons in combination. One is that there is disconnection between the couple, that they are not emotionally feeding each other in ways that meet their emotional needs. So there is an emotional disconnection, and there are not enough boundaries of the relationship. That those have to happen kind of at the same time for an affair to have room to develop. A couple that is disconnected but have strong boundaries to protect themselves are not likely to fall in this trap. And a couple that is very connected without boundaries is often going to be okay, but there's always a danger. Because sometimes you can be unguarded, be a little uncareful, and find yourself in a compromised situation without realizing it. So basically, most affairs happen out of a disconnection in the relationship with boundaries that are not in place. And then the last ingredient is opportunity. Whether the person is seeking out, trying to find connection, or they just happen to find themselves at a vulnerable place and connected. Either way, there has to be that opportunity that develops. So the big part that's in the control of the couple is, how do we nurture our connection and how do we set the boundaries of our relationship? Here's the problem. Not many couples realize that that's the deal. Not many couples talk about what are the boundaries of our relationship before they get married. When I work with couples before they get married, that's one of my big questions. What are the boundaries you have of your relationship? In other words, what makes you feel safe and protected in the relationship? What are the situations that you will or will not allow yourself to be in? For instance, is it okay to friend an ex-boyfriend or girlfriend on Facebook? Is it okay to text an ex-boyfriend or girlfriend? Is it okay to have communication with someone in a relationship? Is it okay to go to dinner with someone of the opposite sex when nobody else is around? Is it okay to have meetings behind closed doors with someone of the opposite sex? I mean, there are lots of ways you can kind of think about that in practical ways. What do we need to do to protect our relationship? And then there's an emotional connectedness. See, most couples find that the connection ebbs and flows in any relationship. There are times when we feel more connected and less connected. Couples that stay focused on maintaining that connection, of building that connection, can find that there are times when it ebbs and flows, and yet they find themselves on the upper side of that more often than the lower side. Couples who are not conscious of that, who are not intentional about building that, find that it wanes way more often, that life gets in the way, that they become parents, and so then they start focusing on the kids, and when they start focusing on the kids, they stop focusing on their relationship, and it plays backseat in the family, or work gets in the way, or volunteering gets in the way, or, you know, the list goes on and on of all of the things that can keep us away from each other and disconnected if we are not intentional. So that's the backdrop of what happens in an affair. Is it has to have A, a lack of connection, B, a lack of boundaries to protect it, and then C, the one that is always around us is opportunity. We're always surrounded by opportunity. A few weeks ago, I was at a meeting, and I was watching people after hours. And what worried me is that there was lots of opportunity of people traveling, of being in foreign cities, of being in the vicinity of others who maybe shared the same kind of passions and interests in life, and suddenly connections would be easily grown if people were not careful. And that's part of the society we live in, where we are it's sometimes easier to find someone of similar traits and similar interests that we were not aware of before our marriage. And that doesn't mean that they're the right person for us, but we fool ourselves. And what we realize now is that our brain has that deep place of wiring. There's a very primitive place of wiring. And that primitive place of wiring is looking for connection. We are built as humans for that connection. When it's not met, we begin to look for places to find it. And part of that is in our sexual makeup. I mean, that's in our DNA of how that happens. And so that the fact that there would be chemistry and connection is just in our DNA, in our wiring, unless we protect it ahead of time. Now, this is not a justification for why it happens. It's an understanding of why we're at risk if we do not set the boundaries and we do not focus on the connectedness. So for a lot of people, you're listening because it's too late for this speech, right? This has already happened. So what I'm giving you now is kind of an understanding of where it came from. And then we're going to talk about what to do. But one of the things I would suggest is that you can begin to understand where this is coming from by looking back on where you missed those boats of connection and boundaries. How did it happen that it was at risk? And then you can begin to understand the roots of the problem. So I want to say this very clearly. If there has been an affair, the person who had the affair is 100% responsible for having not managed the boundaries and having not protected the relationship, 100%. But both people are responsible for having been in a disconnected relationship. And this, so people say, well, how do I get beyond an affair? And my response is, A, to understand that there was a prelude to that affair, and B, to understand that if you stay stuck in that, you'll be caught in something that perpetuates itself. When we are disconnected and there's an affair, we tend to disconnect further, which only justifies whoever is acting out to act out further. It's justification, but it is justification. I mean, that's what justification is, what we tell ourselves. It's not rational. It doesn't make sense. It's what we keep telling ourselves. So we have to be very careful about what do we do after the fact. So let's talk some about some things to do. Number one is you do make a request that the person stops the relationship. So how do you make that request? I would say that there are a number of steps you take. Here's my formula for requesting someone stop a relationship. If you have discovered it and they don't know you know it, you start with, I know about this relationship. I don't need you to deny it or confirm it. Okay? So that's the first part. I know. No need to deny or confirm it. Now, recognize that if you suspect, that's at a different place. This is when you have evidence, you know that something is inappropriate. You may even say, I don't know the extent of this relationship. I just know that it is invading our relationship. Please stop is part number two. It's a request. Please stop that relationship. Please stop whatever relationship it is. You can define that. And then you say, I'm not going to check on you about this. I'm just asking you to stop. So number one is I know. Number two is please stop. Number three is not going to check. Number four is but I'm requesting you stop. And then you wrap it up with a final statement. There's no need for you to reply or justify or tell me anything else. I leave it up to you to decide what to do. Okay? Because here's what often happens. Somebody starts a confrontation. They're angry, they're hurt, and so they go after a confrontation in ways that end up being a debate about what is the nature of an emotional affair, what is the nature of a physical affair, why is the person doing that? It's a justification exercise. And you get so wrapped up in arguing those points that you never get to the place of saying, this is my boundary. Okay, so let's go through that one more time. I know, please stop. I'm not going to check, but I am requesting you stop, and there's no need for you to reply. Number one, I know. Number two, please stop. Number three, I'm not going to check. No, and by the way, when I say you're not going to check, you're not going to check. We'll get to that in just a minute. Number four, but I request that you stop that relationship. And number five is, and there's no need to reply to what I'm asking. I just need you to do that, period. And then you remove yourself from the situation. Okay, this is not time for debate. This is a time to drop the bomb that you know, if that's true, or drop the bomb that it needs to stop, that it's not up for debate, that that's the way you need it to happen. Okay, so now that raises the question of what next. Some people say, ask me, you know, it's very common, should I give them an ultimatum or not? And here's the ultimatum. If you do not stop the affair, you have to get out. If you do not stop the affair, that's the end of our relationship. That's the ultimatum. And so often people say, should I make that as the ultimatum? For me, that's the ultimatum. That is the ultimate boundary of this. If you do not stop, I will leave or you will have to leave. So there are a couple of things that you have to ask. One is, do you think the person will stay or do you think they will leave? Because if you think they will leave, you've got to realize that that ultimatum may truly be the ultimatum. May truly be something they act on and choose that as their exit strategy. And that's certainly true for number two. Are they already out? If you're looking and, you know, you've got the spouse who is separated from you and they've got a foot out the door and they are really involved with this other person and you say, you know, you've got to quit or you got to get out, they'll say, well, then I'm out. And then the ultimatum ends any chance of working to save your relationship. So you have to decide, does an ultimatum have power? Often it does. People are surprised by that, but you have to give a fair assessment, and only you can do that. Do you think by saying, you've got to stop this, will it affect what the other person does? If you don't stop it, you have to get out of the house, can have a strong consequence for people who thought that they were living in what is the truth about an affair. It's a fantasy life. And so when you bring it to their attention, you stomp all over the fantasy, and that's what you want to do. And you want to do it from a point of strength, not from begging and pleading. And that's why I have that way of doing the request that they stop. That the way you ask it, if you do it the way I said, you're doing it from a place of power, of saying, I know you've got to stop. I don't even need you to respond to me. Just do it. And that's worked much better than please never call that person again and on we can go with those arguments that put you in a powerless situation. An ultimatum can be a very powerful place if you think that it will catch the other person's attention. If you don't, recognize that making an ultimatum may end any chance. And if you're willing to take that risk, then you can still make the ultimatum. Okay, so another question that people ask is, do I confront the other person? And generally, I say, yes, you do, if you can do it calmly and you can make a flat request. By flat request, I'm using the tone of voice I'm using right now. If you were to speak to someone in a flat request tone, this is it, what I'm giving you right now. You're hearing me say it. And you could say to the person, look, you are having an inappropriate relationship with my husband or my wife. I would ask that you respect the boundaries of our relationship, that we are married. You respect that relationship and you stop having any contact. So why you want to do it calmly is because you don't want to add fuel to their emotional fire. You don't want to have these two lovers suddenly thrust together by your anger so that they can say, see, look how crazy this person is. This is why we deserve each other. And they will use that as further justification unless you can do it flatly and calmly to both of them. This needs to end. I expect you to look and abide by the boundaries of our relationship. That is flat. That is strongly stated, and it is neutral. Sometimes you find that the other person did not know you existed, had been lied to just like you're being lied to. And when you say that, suddenly they go, wow, I don't want anything to do with this. But think how brave you come across when you do it calmly. That this other person, knowing that they're cheating, has to look you in the eyes or hear you on the phone, be completely calm, with confidence, saying that relationship needs to end. That is holding on to power. And that's why that this often will work. At a very minimum, what you are doing is that you are keeping them from playing the fantasy of it's us against the world. We are so made for each other. We're so special. Our love is special. All the fantasy stuff that's fueled by an affair, which is, by the way, not true. I don't know how many times I've had people say to me after they finally broken off a relationship, I don't know what I saw in that person. I got caught up in it. And enough to know that what's driving this is not love. It's adrenaline, right? Those are two very different places in the brain. Love and adrenaline, as we've talked before, there is an endorphin love and there's an adrenaline love. And endorphin love is long-lasting love. It's about how can I show you my love. Adrenaline love is how can I get my thrills. It's adrenaline-driven. There's not really a lot about the other person. It's getting some needs met at a very carnal level. And that's what drives that, is that adrenaline. Well, the adrenaline is going to fall away. And when it does, it often is left with people looking at the other person going, what was I thinking? So you don't want to give fuel to the adrenaline. You want to take the fuel away. You want to take away that fantasy by saying to one, your spouse, I know you need to stop, and saying to the other person, this is not appropriate. You need to respect our boundaries. Okay, so generally speaking, if you can confront calmly and with a flat request, I suggest that you do that. If you cannot do that because of your own emotions, don't do it. It'll get out of hand and it'll only add fuel to their fire and probably backfire. Okay, some don't things. There's some things you should not do in the midst of an affair. Number one is you should not compare yourself to whomever they're having an affair with. It's not about this great other person. It's about themselves. An affair is a selfish place to be. It's not about this great person that they found. And a lot of times I'll have people come in and go, I don't understand why they're with this other person. They're not as attractive as me. They're not as smart as me. They're not whatever. It has nothing to do with that other person. And it has nothing to do with you. It has something to do with your spouse trying to find something out there. And so you never want to compare yourself. It's not a beauty, a talent, a money, or any other kind of comparison. Don't fall into the comparison trap. Number two is don't believe the fantasy. They're going to talk about how they have found their true love and it's so forever and all that, those other things. Don't believe the fantasy. In fact, you want to, as much as you can, break the fantasy. And part of what fuels that fantasy is the secrecy. That's why you confront. Breaking the secrecy breaks the fantasy. And that's what we want to get to. So number one, don't compare yourself. Number two, don't believe the fantasy. Number three is don't believe you can't recover. When you get stuck in that place where you believe you just there's no way to recover from this, then you miss the fact that countless couples, in fact, more couples after an affair keep their marriage together than those that didn't have an affair. Now, there are couples who can't make it past an affair. But there are plenty that do. So here, you know, a lot of times you hear, oh, a marriage after an affair is impossible. That is not true. I've seen it way too many times to believe that. You can recover and you can actually have a stronger relationship. The reason is because you've realized that your relationship may have been more vulnerable than you believed and you do something to fix it. That's how you get past it and say, wow, what if we use this as a realization of what was wrong in our relationship, and we don't let that recur. We find a way around this. We work to get beyond it. We work to make a relationship that we can treasure forever. That's when you break that belief that you can't recover. So don't believe that you can't recover. Also, don't refuse to forgive. That's very similar. That we have the very mistaken idea in our world that forgiveness is about this other person that we're forgiving. Forgiveness is for you. That's the truth. Forgiveness is so that you do not have to carry this forward. Now, forgiveness is not the same as saying, okay, so I'm all in and we'll just go on with whatever happened. Everything's okay. Que sera, sera. That's not forgiveness. Forgiveness is saying, I'm going to see this differently because I do not want to carry this around the rest of my life. I want to be relieved of it. Now, you may choose to forgive and still choose not to stay in the relationship. Those are two different decisions. But what generally happens is people say, I'm not going to forgive you because then you'll get off the hook. Well, guess what? They never were on that hook that you thought they were on. And when people don't forgive, the other person goes, okay, that's fine. If you're not going to forgive me, I'm moving on because I'm not going to be held in this place. So you choose instead to forgive, not necessarily to rebuild the relationship so that you don't have to drag it around. You don't have to say, wow, what was wrong with me that this happened? So choose to forgive. Don't refuse to forgive, but choose to forgive so that you can move forward and then you can decide what to do about the relationship. Okay, number five is don't play detective. It is very tempting to play detective. You're going to want to look at emails and Facebook and phone records and all of those things. Don't do it. Playing detective does not get you closer to working on the relationship. It only gets you stuck in an adversarial role. So don't play. Once you know that an affair has happened and once you've said, I'm making this request, leave it at that. Let the other person decide what they're going to do and don't get caught in detective, because the more you do it, the more you nurture that place in you that needs to do it. It does not fit you. It does not help you, and it rarely helps the relationship. That doesn't mean you have to ignore all the signs, but don't go digging for them. Don't go trying to install the GPS location system if you know what has happened. You have all the information you need at that point. Now, down the road, the other person may choose to win back your trust. Your spouse may want to win back your trust, and they're going to have to be transparent. But right now, in the midst of it, don't get caught playing detective. And finally, don't threaten. Don't threaten your spouse. Don't threaten the other person with anything. Don't tell them you're going to, you know, tell their job, or that you're going to tell the police, or that you're going to tell your attorney, or that you're going to tell the other spouse or anyone else. Don't threaten. Threatening is working from weakness. Tell them what you expect and stop there. Often we get pulled into the threat when we are caught in a fight or flight spot, and that does not bode well for recovering from an affair. So don't get into that threatening place. Go to your higher self. Raise your standard of what you expect of yourself and keep moving forward. Okay, so that we've covered a lot of stuff in just a little bit of time, but I wanted to just give some. I get so many requests about affairs. I just wanted to address them in a special podcast so you have that knowledge and you can use that as a way of beginning to create your plan on how to deal with your knowledge. So there you have it, the special podcast on recovering from an affair. This is Lee Balcom. I wish you the best.
You've been listening to Save the Marriage Podcast. For more information and help, please visit us at SaveTheMarriage.com.